The wine label, Seven Deadly Zins, produced by Michael David Winery, was literally instrumental in putting Lodi, California on the map as a world-class producer of fine wines. Come along and join Mike Phillips and daughter Melissa Phillips Stroud at their Lodi Winery for a fascinating conversation that proves that a catchy label is just as important as the wine inside the bottle. Tom Wilmer reporting from Lodi, California. Right now we're with Melissa Stroud and Michael Phillips, and we're at Michael David Winery. And we're just talking about there's more to the name Michael David than meets the eye.
We started in 84.
Michael David because?
Because it was my first name and my brother, who was my partner's first name, and we were pretty much a local winery at the time, selling only locally, and people knew us as Mike and Dave, so why not? It made sense. It has a nice ring to it.
And it remains today.
And it's named today, even though we have all these other labels now.
Everybody's still looking for Michael David, wherever he might be.
Yep.
Going back, late 60s, you got a high school, and you grew up in Ag World here in Lodi.
Yep.
When did you get it about wine? You went on to UC Davis, right?
UC Davis was my college that I chose to go to. I wasn't sure I wanted to do anything with wine at the time, so I just started taking lots of chemistry, lots of math, general classes to see what interests me. I had no idea because I grew up farming. I didn't need to take farming classes. My dad was the farming teacher. So I basically got degrees in zoology and psychology, but with all the science background. And then I started taking some wine classes and started drinking wine. I said, I think I really want to come back and do this and make wine.
So when was that when you made that decision? And why? Why did you decide you wanted to do that?
Tried one other gig that I was interested in, which was like marine biology for some reason, because I was a big diver at the time. But I said, nah, this doesn't work. I don't like living in a city. I'm a country boy. I had to come back to the family farm because that's what I knew and that's kind of what I loved and I was comfortable with. But I wanted to have that emphasis on grapes.
So did your dad grow grapes?
We had grapes that my great grandfather planted, and then I had to come back and plant the vineyards on this property in order to make wine with. So I had to beg my dad for land to plant grapes. I really want to grow these grapes, see what kind of wine it's made out of this area, what quality we can get from Lodi fruit, because nobody was making quality out of Lodi.
It must have been really lean and mean when you started out, because you're doing all this work and you have no income coming in for your work.
Well, the income was still the produce and stuff that we were in. We had the fruit stands, of course. We started the farmers markets in California. So we would go into farmers market 7 days a week.
But your wine, the wine side of
things. The wine was only here.
Yeah.
Lodi only and selling locally. And then, as I said, as soon as we came out with that Seven Deadly Zin label, it opened the doors for us out in the world. And Cost Plus World Market was the first chain, small chain, that took us on and said, I want this in every state. So we basically had to go out and find distributors to sell those wines to that chain for us. The three-tier system.
So before the label Seven Deadly Zins, what was your annual case production?
It varied between 1,000 and 3,000 cases. Nothing, because there was no market for it.
You were using old dairy fermenters, or old dairy tanks to ferment,
right,
and doing punch downs, and old beer fermenters to store wine.
Yeah, I used whatever I could, because I couldn't afford to buy big fancy tanks. So I was using these bins out here using small lots, and then dairy tanks because they were supposedly more sanitary. I had that one tank for storage that wasn't considered a wine tank, but it just took a long time because there wasn't money there. There wasn't income from the wine coming in.
I think it's something that's gone to our benefit is just that, you know, a lot of people get into this industry that have a lot of money. And, you know, well, we've had grapes in our family. So, you know, you already had the grapes. Those were easy to have. But, you know, being around for 32 years, there's not a lot of wineries that can say that, you know, family-owned wineries. And so really, yeah, to start from nothing and be one tank at a time, purchase one tank over time, so that by the time, you know, you don't usually have the opportunity to grow slowly. And not that it was a huge business of the farming and the farmers markets, but it was, you know, it was enough to pay the bills. And so this was a side project and, you know, passion that ended up becoming what is essentially our entire business today.
What's really fascinating, too, as we all know here, is
back in the day, if you mentioned a Lodi wine, you did not think quality. You did not think gourmet. You thought of grocery store, cheap,
sweet, fortified.
Yes.
That's kind of what Lodi was about there for a while. Brandy, it wasn't anything about wine. Definitely not quality wine.
Yeah, if it was wine, it was cheap grocery store wine.
Right. That's Lodi's history.
Yeah. And so that has totally turned upside down, and you were one of the pioneers, probably unwittingly. You didn't even, you knew that you wanted to raise the bar for yourself.
Right.
But you had no clue at that time what would happen to Lodi.
I didn't at all. You know, we were just a small winery in Lodi trying to make a go of it, and I know I wanted to make good wines, and I knew what good wines tasted like because I used to go to Napa and taste them.
Right.
I said, okay, this is what wine's supposed to taste like.
So you knew you could do it here.
I always had that feeling. I knew that I could do it here if we grow the grapes right and make the wines the way they're supposed to. Good barrels, good techniques, all the above. And we just had to refine it over time, what worked here in Lodi, because no one knew what it took to make good wine in Lodi.
And you were actually working back with Ripkins and Lucas back in the day, too. So there's a couple of you guys that knew that there was more for Lodi.
Yeah, there's definitely other people in Lodi that were pioneered to make quality wine in Lodi, and it was still a small scale, and it was still very personal and exciting that we were doing it, but it was still taking time, and we still weren't being recognized.
But again, I just can't imagine you having a clue of if you wish for it, it might come true, and it did, you know, that... I mean, you had no way of knowing, man, that you would just go viral.
I never thought I would be as big or as successful as we are. I had one friend that knew I would for some reason. He just told me that from the very beginning. I said, one of these days you're going to be really famous, Mike. I said, no, I don't think so. It's not working out the way that I thought it would be, and it's a struggle out there. It's not easy. And to finally have it click and start working and continue working and growing, it's very satisfying to actually see this come to life and happen.
It's so fascinating because, like this perfect storm, you know, Michael, you finally figured out your grape growing and your processing and vintning, and you knew you had good wine. But then he comes up with this cool label. Without that label, Seven Deadly Zins, you still might be in your little barn making your 1,000 cases.
Yeah, I mean, the name Phillips wasn't super strong. The name Michael David would take a long time to build. Seven Deadly Zin happened. And
how did it happen? What does it mean, and who came up with that?
Originally, it was my idea of the winery. I had seven different growers from seven different old vine vineyards that I made wine with and kept them all separate and tasted them and said, these are all different, but they're all unique and delicious. And I said, well, I need to put them together and sell one wine versus seven different wines. So it came out of the winery as Seven Zin, just easy, simple. And then went to my brother, he was more in the marketing at the time, and said, well, let's tie it to the seven deadly sins we learned in grammar school. And we didn't know if it was trademarked or not, but we applied for it. Nobody had it. We got it a few months before somebody else asked for it. And it was just the luck of the draw that it wasn't used and came out as Seven Deadly Zins, and the wine was good. It's gotten better, but it was good to start with. It was good price. The wine sold itself just because of the name and the label.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, it really resonated with consumers, and you know, they bought it once because they thought it was funny. You know, it struck a chord with them, and so they, you know, you're willing to try it once. But it's so, I mean, we hear from every day from people saying, this is my favorite wine. I drink this every single day. And, you know, that fun name and label got them to buy that first bottle, and the quality of what was inside and what we were doing, that's what's grown the business to what it is today.
I just find it so fascinating. It does not matter how awesome your grapes are or your wine is, unless you have that other side of the component to get it out there.
There's competition in the wine industry like no other. I mean, you go to a grocery store and you have hundreds, if not thousands, of choices. And depending upon if you're shopping on a specific varietal, on what you're having for dinner that night, you're just browsing the shelf and you have no idea which wines are coming from large corporate wineries, which ones are small family owned, and you're just buying blind. You have no idea if you're going to like that bottle of wine. So what does the consumer have to fall back on? You know, something that catches their eye, something that looks like, you know, you're judging a book by its cover.
Yeah. And you guys learned that lesson, fortunately, early, and it's something that you continue to do.
Correct. Yeah, that was the first label, but then the other ones came out right afterwards that were also successful.
Freak Show, tell us about that.
Freak Show, that was my marketing department that came up with the name, coined the name. The freaks on the label was an idea of our artist that designs labels for us. I love the color and the characters, of course. Of course, the wine's good in the bottle, but again, that label's probably going to be even better than Seven Deadly, because it's a Cabernet right now, and Cabernet's still better. So over time, it will grow bigger than the Seven Deadly is even, and people will try it because of the label, the colors, all the characters. It hooks people in to try the first bottle, those names and labels like they are.
How fascinating.
And we recently launched the Freak Show Red Wine, and so that was launched on September 1, and that has already been just taking off. It's on fire right now, so we're still continuing to increase our production. You know, we have huge growth on the Freak Show Cabernet, but now by adding in the red wine as well, we're really growing the program so that it's really on track to be our top wine. And, you know, we've really surpassed being Michael David being just Seven Deadly. We have Earthquakes, we have Petit Petit, we have all these other wines. And with Freak Show sales, the way they're going, that's in line to overtake Seven Deadly.
Wow, how cool. Talk to us about the elephants and Petit Petits for a moment.
Elephants weren't my idea. They were this guy, Ben, that designs our labels. He knew the name. I knew the blend of the wine. It was Petit Syrah, Petit Verdot. And he knows we're a little quirky around here and like to have fun. And he said, okay, what's not Petit? Elephants aren't Petit, so it's a contradictory there. So he said, okay, let's draw elephants with the names Petit Petit and tie it into the circus, which is fun. So it was perfect. I loved it. I loved the label right off the bat. Elephants drinking wine, hanging out in their chairs before they go and perform in the big top. And all that. There's all kinds of other little characters in there that make the whole label unique and fun and interesting that lets you know some of the stories behind them. They're unknown to most people because they don't look at the label that much, but...
But they're all real characters.
They're all real stuff that's going on there, especially in the Freak Show especially, too. But it's another label that just worked, and people love that wine, and they buy it, and they know it as the elephant wine. They don't always remember it's called Petit Petit. So a lot of people remember because of the circus, elephants, and some people know it as Petit Petit. So that's three different identities for that wine that people recognize and remember.
The wines are really going outside of their varietal classifications, and people aren't necessarily buying it because it's a Petit Syrah. They're buying it because they know the wine and they like the wine, mm-hmm. and maybe they learn down the road that it's a Petit Syrah, but they're not typically going into the supermarket or wine shop looking for a Petit Syrah. It's not a very popular varietal, but the label stands out, and they like the wine. So that's ultimately what it comes down to is, you know, getting that first buy, and you get that repeat buyer because they fall in love with it.
So again, going back 30-some years, you had no clue where you'd wind up today. What's your annual case production roughly today?
We're producing close to 700,000 cases.
Whoa.
We're not selling that much yet, but we're producing it for the future.
Right.
So most of that is Seven Deadly. Freak Show is growing a lot, so that's why the number keeps growing, because mm-hmm. all those brands are growing in sales. We're lucky to have increased sales over the last couple of years, especially, of about 25% a year, which is huge.
And you're in 30 countries?
30 countries, all 50 states. All that helps.
Yeah. Talk to us for a moment about the different varieties that you produce.
Of course, Lodi is known for Zinfandel. We think Cab is great here. Petit Syrah is great here in Lodi. We're slightly warmer with cool nights. The reds do really well. I personally love Syrah. I'm a big Syrah guy. I love Syrah. Makes probably one of the best wines at the winery we make. People don't appreciate Syrah like I thought they would. So
is that an educational process?
You just got to give them the taste of the wine. Yeah. And that's why we came out with the Freak Show Red, because that's based on Syrah. And people love that wine even though they don't even know they're drinking Syrah.
So they may never have tried or gone to Syrah if they had not been tempted.
A lot of their background with Syrah has been, you know, Australian Shiraz and at $9.99, and they're over that. That was a phase that came and it went, but, you know, good Syrah, it has such a place in for America and the American palate, but they just, you know, people don't realize it yet. So kind of shift up the package a little bit and give them an opportunity to like it again, and they're loving it.
Very cool. And Melissa, what do you do primarily? You're involved in sales?
So I oversee the day-to-day operations of our sales and marketing team, everything on site. So with my brother, we oversee the day-to-day operations as Mike and Dave are out there. So I work with 70 different distributors across the U.S., oversee my sales team, oversee our marketing, all of our new label developments, all of our projections and business looking forward, not to mention just the daily happenings of running a business and HR, accounting, all those fun things.
And Mike, today you're no longer a winemaker, right?
No, I retired from the winemaking after about 30 years, and I still talk to them, of course, but I've developed a style that I wanted them to carry on, because that's what works for Lodi. And I spend most of my time traveling, building relationships, doing seminars and dinners, and getting the name out, making it more personal, being out there myself than a salesperson.
You're like an ambassador now.
Yeah, that's kind of more what I'm doing, is ambassador, but I'm still involved with business and what's going on here, and work with Melissa daily pretty much too. So.
And you have a restaurant here and a retail gift shop? And
yeah.
Tell us about somebody coming to Lodi, where are you located? What would they find here?
Yeah, absolutely. We're 4580 West Highway 12 in Lodi, just off of a mile east of I-5. And we have a wonderful cafe for breakfast and for lunch. Get here early because we do get busy. And we have a wonderful tasting room and great wine staff that can educate every consumer on all of our wines. And we have a really wonderful wine club of over 6,000 members.
Yeah, I saw your prices for your members. What a temptation that would be to join your wine club.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have members that have been with us for 15 years. I mean, when we first started our wine club, we have original members. And
that's so cool. Well, if we didn't have to go to lunch now, I'd hold you guys captive for more. I've got to say goodbye. It's been so wonderful to meet you, Michael.
No, and thanks Melissa, for spending time with us here at Lodi. Michael David.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Lodi, California, where we've been speaking with Melissa Stroud and Michael Phillips, the brains behind Michael David Winery, The Seven Deadly Sins.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers include Melissa Corbin reporting from Tennessee, Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Steve Cook contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.